Welcome to The Forum, the program that educates, motivates, and advocates on behalf of our listeners. The Forum is sponsored by OSF Healthcare, and it is always a pleasure to have on the line Dr. Kamara Taylor. She is, of course, one of our WPNV contributors, and today we're seeking to reconcile two thoughts. On the one hand, as you know, on our radio station in the last few months, we've been talking about this tense racial climate in our country, most recently in Jacksonville, Mississippi, where white supremacists walked into the Dollar General and killed three people. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was booed when he offered some comments of condolences because a lot of people felt that blood was on his hands for some of the policies that he has in Florida. On the other hand, if you've been listening in the last few weeks, we've been talking about this surge in violent crime in the African-American community in Peoria. Are those separate things? Dr. Taylor doesn't think so.
There is an intersectionality with the two, right? You have African-American people of color, especially like living in lower impoverished communities, that have been conditioned and learned from a system that has been so violent against them to become violent. And I know we don't think about it like that often, and this is by no means to give any excuses for behaviors, right? But when we're talking about conditioning, we're talking about the psychology of violence. There's a psychological infrastructure when it comes to violence. And if you don't, and if the listeners out here don't believe me, think about the mental violence. If they say that we're exposed early on in our households to domestic violence, one or two things happen. We either respond with being violent, or we often align ourselves with individuals that are violent, because that's a learned behavior. So is having history. A long history of being inflicted by violence as a people, a people of color, that we have learned how to only communicate through violent tendencies. And some may say, well, you wasn't a part of slavery, right? I mean, you're a young 25, Gary, right? So there's no way that you was a part of slavery. I was a part of slavery. But what I'm talking about is a system that has been violent. A system that we see that continues to create mass incarceration. A system of policing that continues to be extremely brutal, right? So we pick up on that. And then our communication become extremely violent against one another. I mean, we're watching it with our own eyes, but when people say crime have increased, crime have not increased. What has happened is that behaviors have been exposed differently. People are responding in a more violent manner. And yes, it's not towards just running up into Nordstrom's and taking clothing, right? It has gotten to the point that poverty, the response to extreme poverty, has become a violent response towards one another.
Yeah, I was glad when you were saying you're not necessarily being an apologist for bad behavior. We're trying to understand the mindset of the people who commit crimes. And what we find a lot of times is it is situational. People may have a beef with somebody over some material item. People may have a beef with somebody because of some money owed. People may have a beef with somebody because of a relationship. People may have a... Okay, so there are different reasons why someone would commit a act of gun violence in the neighborhood. But what I hear you saying is that one of the dot connecting factors for all of those situations is poverty, for one, and this learned violent behavior on the other hand. Is that kind of where you're going?
That is very correct, Gary. What I'm saying is that when I say we, I mean especially minorities in the system, African American, Latinx, we have been proponents of creating and recreating what has been done to us, right? So someone would say, well, that's not a, that's making an excuse for, like you said, with air quotes, bad behavior. We're not talking about just the actions itself or the act. We're talking about the mindset, right? In order to understand why our communities are have a heavy influx of violence right now, we have to begin to understand the mindset. What is the mindset behind violence? You know, what is the mindset behind a young white man who's never really had that much interaction with black people to walk into a Dollar Tree next to a HBCU and shoot random people and kill them, right? What is the mindset behind an individual that will go into a church of people of color and they pray for him and then he open up fire and execute them? You know, what is the mindset between a young black man that will put a gun up to my head for a Montclair coat? Right? We have to begin to understand there is a psychological infrastructure that goes along with trauma. So when we're looking at violence in our communities, we're looking at generations of trauma that has been passed down that they don't understand. If me and you, Gary, is very intellectual, and when I was mean intellectual, I don't mean because we have degrees. It doesn't mean because of our jobs. I'm talking about emotionally intelligent. Right? We're very emotionally intelligent. I didn't say emotionally aware, but we're very emotionally intelligent individuals. So we're going to step back, even in our anger, and we're going to make a different decision because of our psychological infrastructure of not wanting to cause harm. Cause no harm, do no harm. But America has caused so much harm and done so much harm that it is created in an atmosphere that responding in violence psychologically is a good thing. If it wasn't true, then we wouldn't be able to see millions and millions of hits on fights online. We wouldn't be able to see that the same things that we have taught our kids to stay away from has been weaponized. Mm-hmm. Right? It becomes a weapon towards us. So there's a psychological infrastructure of violence that we're missing, that we're ignoring. And until we understand the root cause, it's kind of like cancer. You can't cure something unless you know the root cause, right? You can't treat diabetes unless you know that a person is diabetic and what's causing that. You can't treat a heart, like, you know, any micro infraction we cannot treat unless we understand the root cause. We have to understand the root cause, and it just can't be based off because they're black, or they're Latin, or they're violent. We have to understand the psychological infrastructure of why that mindset, their thinking, the processing. And it's a learned behavior. Everything we do, I think one of the great philosophers says that we are all born as a tubular rosa, right? That means we come as a blank slate. Every single thing about us, we take in information-wise, we learn it. And that's how we become who we are. So when we're trying to understand white violence against people of color and black violence against people of color, there it's an intersectionality with it because it comes from the psychological infrastructure of what violence is and why we choose violence. All right. We have to understand why do we choose violence.
Right. Now, a couple things come to mind, and, you know, you were talking about me being 25 years old. I have to speak these things before I forget them, okay? So one thing that comes to mind is corporal punishment. Another thing that comes to mind are the Jerry Springer-type shows. Let's talk about each one. When you were talking about learned behavior, I remember a conversation with some school administrators, and they were talking about when teachers used to spank students, and that was taken out of the school. And somebody said, you know, I'll beat you like your mama beat you, okay?
Right.
And I remember getting whippings when I was little, and people in my family got whippings, and your mom or dad would take off the belt, or people talk about they would get a switch and stuff like that. And then people started to re-examine that and where did that come from? and they start talking about whippings on plantations
and
how we learned that. I'm curious to find out your thoughts on that.
Gary, I'm so happy that you brought that up because that's what I was yearning towards, right? That's what I was starting the engine to go towards, understanding that we have been conditioned to respond in a violent manner. And it's no different than spanking, whooping, beating, right? Because that's how we were taught to stay in line. Right? So when you think about the psychological infrastructure of, like, why do a person choose violence? It's to keep another person in line. Right? This is my territory. These are my drugs. This is my block. Right? This is my country. Not in this town. Right? It's the same thing over and over and over. So that form of punishment. And I'm glad you talked about schools, because most schools create a school-to-prison pipeline to keep kids in check, right? We kick them out. We punish them, right? We use punishment, right? And so violence is another form of punishment. It's a very interesting dynamic that people don't delve deeper, like I said, with the psychological infrastructure of where violence comes from. All right.
Now, the other one, I'm a media person, and there's a wonderful book that was written many, many years ago called Amusing Ourselves to Death. And in the book, the author talks about just the impact that media has on people. If you don't have a strong sense of identity, you start to take identity with anything that seems real at the time. And media images are very legitimizing. You know, when you look at something on television, it's like, oh, well, that must be right. And so I'm going to model that behavior. Well, something started to happen, as you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, into the 2000s. And we saw this phenomenon of television shows like Jerry Springer, Geraldo Rivera,
Sally Jesse Raphael,
where you had people,
Jenny Jones,
people who would get in each other's face and argue and point their finger and yell, and they would bleep out the obscenities. And then on Springer, the audience would start yelling, fight, 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 fight. Mm-hmm. And people would go after each other, pulling each other's, you know, weave out, right? Mm-hmm. And to the point where Steve would come in and try to break them up, let them fight a little bit, but, you know, eventually they would be broken up. And now Steve has his own show. So even in some of those court shows, you know, you would have this kind of mock fight, kind of mock to real fights happening. I'm curious to find out your thoughts on that, because to me that added a layer of violent mentality.
Well, what it did, Gary, was created a culture of young people that to kind of display that violence was okay, to respond emotionally to any frustration in a violent manner was okay. Because media does depict life and vice versa, right? Life, the depiction of media, and media depicts life. When we look at like how each individual person responds when they watch that show, something happens in our brain with neurons. Because I have to always go back, as a neuropsychologist, I have to always go back to what's happening in the brain, right? When we shoot a gun, when we see a violent act happen, right, the neurons in our brains, right, those same dopamine levels that causes us to feel good when we exercise, right, that causes us to feel good when we're eating chocolate, that causes us to feel good when we're having, if we're age-appropriate, sexual relations, right? You know, it makes us feel good. That's the same thing that happens to our brain when we watch things that are violent. That's the reason why ID Channel, Serial Killer Podcast, all of these things, it's a billion-dollar industry now because people are so fascinated by it. So although shows like Jerry Springer and Steve and Jenny Jones and all of these and Gerardo, all of these shows back in the 80s, early 90s, monetized violence, right? What some producer did was thought about, and even these reality TV shows now, right? It's not a great reality TV show unless there's some violence, right? And that somebody is throwing a drink in somebody's face, calling them all type of obscenities and doing these things, because they know that it illuminates and it changes the brain. And the reason why it changes the brain, Gary, is because we become less and less and less and less desensitized to seeing violence when we are watching it. It's no longer a culture shock or a shock factor to us. So when things happen, I can remember, and this might be dated my young age of 35, right? I can recall the first time a violent act happened in my community, growing up on the inner city of Chicago, that I was aware of it, right? It was like the world stopped. Neighbors, people were impacted so heavily. Now, a shooting occur every day, and it's just like, oh, yeah, Jun Jun got shot. Because what we have watched all of these years, what we've been exposed to, what we're listening to, has done a great job of desensitizing us. So it's not just that media sensationalized it, right? It causes us to be less impacted. It causes us to remove emotions and having compassion. And that's the scariest part. That's the reason why when a brother kill a brother, he's no longer impacted by that. Because for years, he's been conditioned to remove himself and remove emotion to not feel anything. That's what makes it so scary.
Yeah, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We want to remind our listeners, this is The Forum on WPNV. The Forum is sponsored by OSF Healthcare, and it's always a pleasure to talk with Dr. Kamara Taylor, one of our WPNV contributors, and we're talking about this intersectionality, the intersection between what is happening in our communities. Often when we talk about gun violence, sometimes we talk about that as being separate from what is happening when we look at white on black crime, these mass shootings that have taken place. When you mentioned the young man that walked into the church, the AME church a few years ago, and most recently at the Dollar General. The FBI is listing the threat from white supremacists as the number one domestic threat to America, which should be a red flag for black people that we have a target on our back, right? And so, but it's like I was talking to a gentleman who said, you know, Gary, we're getting it on both sides. You know, I'm a concealed carry person, and I walk down the street, and I'm watching over both shoulders, you know, thinking that the young white guy might have some issue with me. And then on the other hand, you know, it's like I got to watch myself around the brothers. What you're saying is that there's a connection. We're talking about reality TV shows, and one thing that comes to mind are these Real Housewives shows, you know, where you have these women who are very well-to-do. I mean, you know, these are rich black women who have mansions and you talk about degrees and they have, you know, enhanced bodies and designer clothes, and they vacation in these exotic places. But the show always ends up somehow with them calling each other, you know, the B word or the H word, as you say, throwing a drink in somebody's face. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, well, wait a minute. Aren't we supposed to be modeling a little better than that?
No, society don't want us to model black success looking anything except if it's interchangeable with violent behavior. Right? Because that continues to desensitize us as humans. And it's real. Like, you know, if my niece at 3 years old, which she can't because there's all types of things my sister have on that, but if she can look at TikTok, and most of the TikTok, it has violence, you know, teach you how to be be violent, to try to do things as violent, and there's no regulation on anything, right? And so that is what's selling. If it's not like this culture of like fighting each other, you know, we are okay. So I guess what I'm saying, Gary, like a couple of months ago, I was visiting Oakland, California, for the first time in my life. I had never been to Oakland. I heard it was a lot of black owned restaurants, vegan spots, right? You know, I'm vegan. And so I'm visiting Oakland for the first time in my life. There for 3 hours, I just got off the plane, go to Jack London Square, which is a very prominent touristy type of area, right? Walking back to my hotel. And before I can get like a couple of blocks back to my hotel, I was on the ground with a gun to my head, right? This kid was picking me up. This is December of last year, December 30th of last year, right? This kid wanted my coat. I give him my coat, Gary, right? Just my clear coat, not even knowing like this is a popular coat in the hood. I had just came from someplace skiing. Right. And I give him my Montclair coat, and that wasn't enough. Right. And like the young man that you was talking to that said, hey, listen, not only do I have to worry about, you know, someone that's non-color trying to take my life in that moment, regardless of how many degrees I have, regardless of how much great that I'm doing in society, this kid had a gun cocking it in the bridge of my nose. And he was no older than my nephew, which had to be about 16, 17 years of age. And my life was minimal to him. And with every portion of me, you know, I could say this is about greed, this is about all of these other things, but it's also about a society that has created an environment for this kid to feel so powerful by, like, disseminating violence against someone else. And it's because you're watching it. It's because it's all around you. It's because a society has created an infrastructure, when I mean society, an infrastructure, a political infrastructure has said, this is how you should respond. This is what you should do. This is how you get power, by being violent. And I mean, Gary, we can talk about this all day, even though I know we both don't have all day, but think about it. Most people justify violence and violence behavior. This is how slavery was justified, through the Bible. They go back and they show reenactments of people being violent against each other.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
In all essence, that means beat the hell out of your kid so they can stay alive. Right? And so when we're thinking about this, we're thinking about a culture of our people, generations, that have no one leading them to tell them that this is not okay.
Now, wait, I got to interrupt because we are running out of time. We only got a few minutes left. We did have someone who was killed in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. King's message of nonviolence, man, when I go back and I read King, I'm thinking just how... You could say his last book, Where Do We Go From Here, was prophetic. from the standpoint that if we don't follow this course of nonviolence, and if we don't enact some of the things that he recommended in terms of looking at our economic structure, looking at our institutions and retooling them and placing people above profits, this war de-escalation, all of those things. If we don't do those things, we're going to end up in these situations. And I'm looking at the situations we're in, and I'm thinking, wow, we are there because we didn't follow that discourse. Yeah. So, yeah. Look, in the little time that we have left, I know in talking to you in the past, you've talked about some things that everyday people can do, parents in particular, as far as watching what their kids are watching. We didn't talk about music. you know, just the violence that's in some of our kids' music. What are some general things our listeners can take away that will help us become a less violent people?
I think by having open discourse, open conversations, uncomfortable conversations, right? I've seen a lot oftentimes that the homes that we're in, our communities that we're in, we run away from the things, right? We don't want to discuss these hard things, or we're talking about them as adults and not having a weigh-in with young kids that these issues are extremely impacting. Begin to have like subgroups. Begin to have connect with your local schools. Make sure that we're having these roundtable discussions about things that's really impacting. Have them in a household, right? Have them with other young people. You know, begin to build bridges that way, because reversing what's happening is going to take work from everyone within a community, Gary. The teachers, the educators, the parents, the grandparents, the youth themselves, right? We have to push a different agenda. And I was going to say this, you're right. Martin talked about it and where do we go from here, but they didn't just kill a man, they killed the message. So we have to find a way to reiterate the message, because the message would have prevented or at least gave us the tools to be able to navigate against what we're seeing now. So I would say the one thing right now to try to reverse or do an inverse of everything that's happening in our community, we have to bring things to a head. We have to get on board the individuals that young people look up to create a different message. We have to do that with Lil Durk. People don't even know that Lil Durk, who talk about all this violence, he has a youth mentor group. My nephew is a part of it, that he took him to the Super Bowl. But we're not talking about those things. So we have to push a different agenda in our community. That's what I have to say, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was walking past a car after school, parent picking up their young man, and the music that was coming out of the car, Kamara, was atrocious. I mean, it was be this, MF that, N-word this, I'm going to do this, blah, blah, blah. And the kid was coming out of school, getting into the car. And I was out of position where I couldn't come back and talk to the parent about it. But I made a mental note of it, that the next time I see that car and that parent, I'm going to have one of those uncomfortable conversations that you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, hey, Dr. Kamara Taylor, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for being on the forum.
Thank you, Gary. Take care.
The forum is sponsored by OSF Healthcare. The forum airs at 10 a.m. on Saturday and is rebroadcast at 7 p.m. on Sunday. We want to leave you with a quote from novelist Alice Walker, who said the most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any. Thanks for listening.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking, time for thinking ahead.